Hello and welcome to The Download. I'm your host, Dave Richardson, and it is Stew's Days, a little overcast Stew's Day, and you can't see it because, by the way, next week we're going to finally get to video, and in preparation for video, Stu has his new headset so that his sound will be crystal clear. Stu, you look like you're about to look out your window there, and you probably can look out the window over the city of Toronto and give us a traffic report on an afternoon drive home.
Traffic's looking good on the Gardiner this afternoon. Normal times, 10 minutes, probably 9 right now, I'd say.
There we go. So traffic on the 10s with Stu. And we don't have a Stu for the traffic. Straffic.
Straffic.
I'm a little excited today, Stu, because for the first time, only the third time ever in Canada, a McRib goes on sale today.
Ooh.
And for those of you who haven't listened in the past, I'm a devotee of the fake pork sandwich that McDonald's brings out about once a year in the U.S., but has only offered in the original version of 1982. 2008, and then now. Oh, and our producer Nancy did not know that McRib was available. So yes, starting today across Canada, McRib, and then Tim Hortons they got their classic donuts out. Maybe this is more your style. And the walnut crunch was always my favorite. They discontinued it, and it's available now. So my diet is done.
Well, we better keep it brief today then, if we want to. Yeah.
Well, that was actually part of my thinking, Stu, because I am hungry. It is lunchtime. Yeah. anything that you particularly like from a food perspective that you kind of don't get all the time, but you really like it when you get it?
Well, the old donuts. Like, I used to love a maple glazed.
Oh, and yeah.
they don't have those as frequently as they used to. Yeah. I was never one for like the Dutchie or the apple fritter or anything like that, but a maple glazed. Oof.
Yeah, apparently the apple fritter is just. I shouldn't say it. I'm not going to do it. We don't want to. We never want to get in trouble with any of the companies that you might invest in. But so Stu, along with a lot of great food items that we could rush out and get. Continue to see strong performance in this handful of stocks that we've been talking about, the Magnificent Seven, or maybe it's a couple more than that. But you know, we've talked a lot over the last year about the concentration in some of these large cap names, somewhat technology names, and you know, we can always talk about the excitement of a dividend growth stock that might have a 5% yield and you might think is gonna double over the next 5 or 6 years, but it's a lot more exciting to think about one of these stocks that seemingly doubles every 6 months. But you get to a certain point with some of these stocks, do you not, where they start to look really, really, really expensive despite the strong prospects for the business? Because is that something you see?
Yeah, like people get so excited about what they call the TAM. Right, which is the total addressable market. That is the big line, Dave. And you know, so when you get into these periods of time around artificial intelligence and cloud computing, it almost seems like the sky's the limit on some of these total addressable markets. You know, so it's a backdrop that allows for a lot of dreaming around the future of revenue growth and how exciting that might be. And, you know, in many cases, some of these businesses do grow their revenues at pretty high rates. But one of the things that we like to do is to go look at history, because there's been, you know, a handful of situations where you do get really exciting stories. You know, internet the first time along, e-commerce, all, you know, you name it.
Sure.
So, you know, one of the databases we have here is we have every company in North America that hit $1 billion in sales. And then we track them forward for the next 10 years and look at their compound annual growth rate in sales over that time period. And, you know, I haven't run this just frequently, but, you know, the last time I did it, there was only two companies that compounded their revenue at over 30% a year for 10 years after they hit $1 billion in sales. And that was Walmart and Google.
Okay.
And both of them, and they didn't do it every year for 30% per year, but that was the 10-year total. You know, Microsoft was fantastic. It was quite close to that, but not quite at 30. And, you know, the thing that we know over time is that, you know, when we get these elevated stock prices and these elevated expectations, people expect not only for the growth to be very strong, but for it to be very linear.
Yes.
Like, it's even amazing, you know, looking at a company, like you take a big company like Microsoft, which, you know, today valuation is approaching its higher level.
Yes.
It's growing its revenue, you know, north of 10%. It's been a great, you know, revenue grower. But even in the last 6 months, we've seen, you know, what some people might say, like the enterprise value. So in the case of Microsoft, there's not really debt, but the market cap, say, to sales on a forward expectation basis is back over 10 times.
Wow.
In the middle of last year, it was as low as 7.5. So as you can see, like the actual underlying business is compounding away for you at, you know, that double digit rate. But what creates the real move in the stock price in a short period of time is the change in valuation. So, you know, what we tend to do when we get into these time periods is say, how much growth does there need to be for this business still to compound the share price for us over a longer period of time? So, like, in other words, can we accept the volatility that undoubtedly will come our way at these higher valuations than maybe what we saw last fall? And in some cases, the answer is yes. And in some cases, the answer is no. What becomes really important in that analysis is the income statement. Because many of these businesses generate cash, they don't have debt. But what becomes really important is you look at the revenue and you say, what portion of that revenue might be recurring versus cyclical? The more recurring, the better. So I don't know if anyone has Office 365 or has their Apple iCloud or things like this where you're just paying every month and they increase the price on you and they add features to it and you tend to just carry on. So the revenue is pretty recurring. The next thing we look at is the gross margin. So that's you subtracting the cost of goods sold. And the higher the gross margin, the better, because that means as revenues grow, an incremental amount flows through to a company's cash flow or earnings. So, you know, so we have these, you know, we take all these stocks and we say, some of them trade at elevated valuations. Do we think the revenue can keep growing? Yes or no? If that revenue keeps going, does it have the characteristics in the income statement, a wide gross margin? Then you look at the next line. Does it have sales and general admin costs that are leverageable? So that if revenue keeps growing, margins can expand and there'll be even more cash flow. So cash flow will grow faster than that revenue down the road. And you can kind of wind that all up in a 5 or 10 year financial model that you could almost do on the back of an envelope and get you in the right ballpark to say, yes, even at this valuation, I'm willing to withstand any volatility that might come my way because the share price can still get there on what we otherwise know to be a very good business.
Yeah. So you need this model because I know one of the things that I often talk and end up talking about with investors when they're looking at maybe, you know, doing something like buying a portfolio of, you know, they'll generally say this, you can plug your ears, Stu, you're not going to like this, but, you know, dull, boring dividend stocks. I can just buy a portfolio of those, or it's more exciting for me to buy this high growth tech stock. And you start to get into the valuation discussion, right? And the future and where it sits right now, you've got to have a model to properly evaluate that high growth stock, because it's always going to be expensive by a lot of traditional measures. So, but there are companies that you're going to want to own that are expensive at a particular point in time. You need a way to identify or at least see, as you say, realistically, given a certain set of circumstances, can their stock continue to appreciate? So does it continue to be a good investment? Because otherwise you just toss it to the side, and you just, you know, you mentioned three Walmart, Google, Microsoft, you know, you would have tossed them to the side, and you would have missed great opportunities to invest even after they became pretty significant companies.
You know, I think that's 100% correct, because, you know, as you know, there's kind of two things you do as an investor. You can bet on the share price just going up in the short term, which you know, there's a speculative component to that activity. Like, you know, who's kidding who? That's part of the markets. I get it. But, you know, and you have a different toolkit for that. But if you're going to sit there and say, I'm going to buy this, and even if I end up paying the high for the year, can I still make money a number of years from now? And that's really where you want to get into the math of the revenue growth and the income statement and what have you. In the very short term, you know, almost anything can happen. You know, we look at some of these businesses today. So you can say, you know, Microsoft trades at 10 times its sales in a couple of years. In the very peak of the technology bubble, Cisco was the biggest company in the NASDAQ. It traded at 20 times its sales in the peak of 2000. So, you know, so one, that kind of shows, like, as exciting as this has been, it's not nearly at the levels that we saw, you know, during the tech bubble. Plus, the businesses are much different. There's more recurring revenue. The margins are wider than they were at the time. But nevertheless, you always want to ask yourself, like, if I was going to buy this today and I was going to put it in a lockbox for 10 years, can I make that high single digit to double digit return? What has to happen? And is that possible? And do I think it has is it not only possible, but is it probable? And, you know, that's a real pretty good sanity check in today's market. And, you know, there's lots of those highly valued companies that still fit that bill. And there's some that don't.
Yeah, I had Marcello Montaneri on a couple of weeks ago, and we kind of got into this around some of these big technology stocks, and the idea that, you know, in technology, if, you know, you look really over the technological era where you kind of categorize tech stocks, you know, more over the last 30, 35 years, and as you see these companies come up in a new industry and evolve, you tend to have, you know, pretty high concentration of, you know, a small number of winners and losers, and then there's usually one big winner, and so some of these companies that we're talking about have gone even beyond that, because they've already been big winners in several different areas of technology, but because they're so large and they can devote so much cash to research development to be on the cutting edge, or to just buy some of these smaller companies with emerging technologies, just their overall market position allows them to add new businesses, as you say, new cash flow streams that they can eventually dominate and continue to grow at these astounding rates. And like you say, you need a way to measure just how reasonably valued they are relative to where you're going to be 5-10 years from now, and whether it's a good time to invest.
Yeah, and you know, scale plays, you know, to your point, a bigger role than maybe it has in the past, because, yeah, you know, when we talk about artificial intelligence, the amount of money required for language models and things like this, you know, to build server farms and data centers and things like this, these are big tickets, and they kind of benefit the largest players who have that extra free cash to just keep on.
Yeah. Stu, so I remember a number of years ago, I'm going to guess it's about 7 or 8 years ago, if we put a time frame, maybe you'll remember. I had a conversation along the same lines with you about a Canadian company, Shopify. And we were looking at that, and it was hitting all-time highs. I believe at the time it had just become the largest stock on the TSX, or it was approaching that level. And we talked about this very thing in terms of how to value that company relative to your database of companies that had grown to a certain size, and then you highlighted just at the time that you know, perhaps Shopify had gotten ahead of itself a little bit. When you look back over the last, when you look at a company like that now, and we've got to be careful, we're not recommending or picking individual stocks, just looking at in this case at how valuations have shifted 7-8 years later. How has Shopify evolved through that period, and what does it look like now? Was it a stock at any point in time where you may have held it in one of your portfolios?
Well, in some of the portfolios, we hold it in more healthy positions today than we certainly did. Yeah. But it's a great kind of illustration of what we just talked about. So, in late 2020. Shopify traded at almost 35 times its forward sales.
Yeah. Wow.
Today, it trades at 10 times sales.
Ah. Okay.
So, you know, 10 times sales is you know, you still need growth to make 10 times sales work, but the level of growth is a lot different than 35 times sales.
Yeah.
And, you know, if in fact, if you go look at, you know, their financial results in the last 4 or 5 years, I bet their revenue has more than doubled.
Yeah.
You know, if we sit here today and we say in 2020, they had revenue of $3 billion. Yeah. This year, they'll probably have revenue north of $8 billion.
Wow.
So you have a very strong growth business, but it's a great point that the stock market's enthusiasm for that growth got a little bit ahead of what still ended up to be a fantastic actual experience. You know, today we sit here at 10 times and you're hoping for kind of high teens to 20% growth. You look at the gross margins, it still has a pretty high set of expectations in it, but it's really changed quite dramatically since the last 4 years. So, you know, it's great math as you bring up, but you've got a stock that was $150 or $60 US at its peak. Today it's around 80. So it's lost half its value. Meanwhile, its sales have more than doubled, but its price to sales ratio has fallen from 35 to 10. And if you add all that together, that's how you get the share price declining in half. But you know, and you feel you almost feel for management of the business, because if you could double revenue every 4 years, that would be pretty spectacular. It's just that the stock market got, super, super exuberant in front of it.
And this is an expression that you've used with me on this podcast. You know, there's the business and there's the stock, right? You can have a spectacular business, but the stock reaches a certain point at some point in its history where, you know, the exuberance around it has just gotten too much, and the price has gone too high, the valuation. No matter how successful the business is from that point on, there's no way it can sustain that level of valuation.
Yeah, there's two really important things which you just said. The first is the law of large numbers, right? So, you know, just having to grow 20% every year requires an awful lot of revenue 10 years from now. And the second is business is competitive. Yeah. And when someone, you know, when you look at the other company growing really quickly, you start copying them, you start trying to do things. And that gets you into the old Warren Buffett comment around moat. The stronger your moat, the harder it is to compete. And Shopify has a pretty good moat. But, people will try and chisel away at it over time and figure out any weakness they can. And that's, that's the great thing about kind of evaluating and analyzing businesses over time, watching all the changes that take place.
Excellent. Well, that's an interesting primer again for the kind of market that we've been in, because we have talked a lot about, if we look at the S&P 500, the Magnificent Seven, and then the other 493, and talked about looking at the other 493 and what needs to happen for them to start to catch up, or, you know, the economic backdrop and how that affects those companies. But I think a lot of people like to take a look at those seven. They get pretty excited about it and need to think about, you know, have I missed the boat, or is this something I need to think about? And then over what time frame and what kind of metrics can I use to make some calls around that and whether or not they fit in the portfolio? So this was, once again, Stu, just fantastic. Almost like knowing a special route through the traffic, because you're pointing it. I point to switch lanes here and move up, get over, and cut that drive home from 40 minutes to 20 with Stu.
That's Straight with my new headset. Sounds like it's time for a maple dip, Dave.
Sounds like it's time for a McRib. I'll be a bit heavier. And again, look for us. We think we are almost positively going to be on video next week, along with audio. So don't skip the audio. Other than our mothers, most people might suggest we should stay on audio, but we're going to try video anyways. And Stu, we'll catch up with you next week.
Great. Thanks, Dave.
This recording has been provided by RBC Global Asset Management, Inc. for informational purposes only and is not intended to be investment or financial advice. You should consult your own legal, accounting, tax, investment, or financial planning advisors before engaging in any transactions.